I've got Carl Schwartz with me. Carl is the marketing director. Ooh, marketing, that word, over at Lhasa OMS. He and I have had some conversations over the past year or so about marketing because it's something we're both interested in. And it's something because we're both involved with the acupuncture community. We have some opinions and ideas. And I'm delighted that we have an opportunity to sit down over a cup of coffee in the internet and have a conversation. Carl, welcome to Cheological.
Michael, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be talking to you today.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk with you. I enjoyed the webinar that you guys put on a couple of weeks ago. You covered so much information in 1 hour about marketing. I'm surprised your brain didn't explode.
It is a topic that I can speak to in my sleep. It's near and dear to my heart. It's something that I've focused my career on for 20 plus years and was just happy to be able to share some of that with our customers.
So I'm curious, what got you into marketing?
I was drawn to it because I knew what motivated me as a consumer, regardless of the product or service. So I really wanted to know more about what motivated other people. For me, it just comes down to, you know, a simple question of, is this something that someone needs and how can I help make someone's life a little bit better? And so the psychology piece behind it, the analytical piece behind it, and the strategic piece behind it just really drew me in. And so I was actually on a career path toward politics and made a hard right turn and never looked back.
You know, I guess when you think about it in a way, politics and marketing aren't all that different, are they?
They're not. I probably feel less of a need to take a shower every time I come home, you know, my current profession than I did my previous profession.
Okay. So why is it that people hate marketers so much?
I think it's over the years, as people have just become bombarded with marketing and advertising messages, they've become desensitized to it. And they really just don't want to be sold. They want an authentic voice. They want people to understand what they're unique situation is. And me personally, when I see a marketing message that has absolutely no context to my background or what I might be or may not be looking for, I get annoyed as well. So that's really why people just don't want to be sold anymore.
And they don't want to be interrupted. Life is already busy and noisy enough.
They don't, unless it is something that is of interest to them. And so, you know, the marketing technology has made such great strides to help achieve that, you know, where we can show marketing messages to people who are interested in that marketing message at a time when they do want to be interrupted or they are, you know, would be more receptive to receiving that message.
Right. Or they're actually looking for what you might have to offer. They're actually actively seeking it.
Exactly.
Which is really the best time to deliver a solution to that.
It is. And it is a power that many marketers abuse. They want to do the shotgun approach where they're just blasting their message out to anyone and everyone. And it has an adverse effect, not just on their company, but on future marketing messages they come across.
I mean, everybody hates spam.
Correct.
And we know spam, it obviously works well enough for enough people doing it, where they wouldn't be doing it. But for anyone who doesn't want that message, it's anti-marketing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. And as I said, it, you know, it impacts future messages, whether it's from that same company or not. We may send an email that was one of 10 emails that person received. And if the previous 9 had no context to what that, you know, person was doing professionally or personally, our email just gets tossed in the trash heap as well, you know, is sort of guilty by association.
Right. Well, I started my practice 20 years ago. The internet was just beginning. I remember building a website. Oh my God, this was pre-Google. I'm dating myself. This was before Google. AltaVista was the big search engine back then. And Yahoo was just beginning to come along.
I worked for the other big search engine back then. Lycos.
Lycos, yes. Right. Yeah.
I was an early employee of Lycos.
What I'm about to say, I'm sure will make sense to you. I hope it makes sense to the listeners. I guess it depends on, you know, what decade of life you're in. But it seems to me that at this moment in time, it has never been easier to build some kind of a business, whether it's you're selling something, you're providing a service like we do, you're just trying to get an idea out there, whatever it is. There's never been an easier and better and low-cost way of doing it than we have right now. But the problem with this is now everybody's got a digital megaphone and they're all screaming in it. We were talking about all the noise. It's never been a better time to get your message out, and there's never been a noisier time to get your message out. Can you give us a couple of thoughts on how to kind of cut through the noise? What channels to use? Do you use email? Do you use Twitter? Do you use like a postcard that comes in the mail? What are some ways of getting the message out to the people that might be looking for you as an acupuncturist?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, your last statement there, you know, really should be the first thought. And it isn't necessarily the first thought, which is you have to make sure that you're speaking to the right audience. And so once you identify who that audience is, and, you know, I talk to our customers about this now where, take Google, for instance, if someone's searching for acupuncturist near me or acupuncturist in St. Louis, they are very likely to schedule an appointment once they find what they are looking for, as opposed to if they are searching for migraine relief. Now, they might be interested in acupuncture, but they might not be. And so that's sort of a subtle distinction, but speaking to that first audience in a different way than you would speak to the second audience. And so I'm not saying don't, you know, approach that kind of wider audience, but it is really important to understand exactly, you know, who you're speaking to and then what point in their need stage are they. And so again, if they're searching for an acupuncturist, they have had acupuncture, they are absolutely ready to schedule an appointment. They're just trying to find the right practitioner. You always have to start there with who that audience is. And then you start to think about, okay, how can I have this conversation? There is a lot of noise. It is very easy to create a website, to start Google Ads, to you know, put your services out there on social media, Facebook, Instagram, whatever the case may be. The next thing I always counsel is to be authentic. You know, you're not trying to necessarily hard sell someone. You have a solution and they have a problem. And it's really just that conversation that comes with it. Google is a great way to do it. It's easy, relatively easy, and it's relatively fast to get up and running there. Social media is also a great way where you can, you know, have a little bit more in depth of a conversation digitally than you can through Google. And then email is the other one. Now, you have to have their email address first and permission to use it, but email is another great way to have that conversation. For me, it's you have to figure out what your story is, what your narrative is, understand who that audience is, and then, you know, what's the best way to connect with them.
We were just talking about Google Ads. Anybody can set that kind of thing up. It's, I mean, they're basically selling a spot on page one up toward the top to the highest bidder. When people are looking for, again, someone like an acupuncturist, because that's what we're talking about, do people look at the Google ads and go, oh yeah, that's an ad, I'm ignoring it, and they go for the organic search, or do they just click on what's on top? Have you got any thoughts about that?
I do. Most people do not distinguish between the ad and the free search results, which come below that, especially if they are searching with what I call a geography modifier. So they're including a city, a state, or a nearby or near me append into it.
Or zip code.
Zip code's big too. If they're doing that, they're starting at the top of the page, clicking on whatever's first. And the paid ad, on average, receives 30% of all the clicks on that first page.
Oh, wow.
And if there's no paid ad, then those clicks just get distributed to what's below it.
30%.
30%. So it is immensely important. And I counsel private practices all the time that, you know, assuming there's no heavy competition, I was speaking with a practitioner in Denver and I counseled against Google Ads because I could tell that there was, it was going to be expensive for that particular practitioner to try to buy ads, as opposed to I was speaking with another one in Comac, New York on Long Island, and there was no competition. So I said, you know, today or tomorrow, you know, get your ads going because it's inexpensive and you will get new patients from it.
Yeah, good return on investment with those. Yeah, Google's, they're really savvy with the way they've done it. I mean, it really is an auction. And of course, a more crowded marketplace, price is going to be higher. I mean, if I was Google, I'd do it that way too.
That's how Google has become Google. There are times where I walk around saying it's Google's world. We just live in it. As a marketer, it really kind of feels that way sometimes. Facebook would have something to say about that, but everything still flows through Google. In whatever industry you're in, people usually start at Google. And so it is important to understand as a business, you know, how you can leverage that platform they've given you to, you know, the greatest impact for your business.
Yes. Well, I love Google myself. And it's because I decided to go all in on Google and all in on getting onto page one with my clinic on a regular basis. And it seemed to me, because I wasn't crazy about paying for ads. I don't know why. It just stuck in my craw. Or maybe I'm just kind of a DIY kind of guy. I like to do it myself. Seemed to me the way to go about that was create tons of good content on my website. This is sometimes called content marketing. Tons of good content. So lots of blog posts written for searches that I imagined people were doing if they were looking for someone like me. I'd have an article on my website about acupuncture for migraines or Chinese medicine for headaches, or, you know, how to naturally treat headaches with acupuncture and Chinese medicine. You know, just lots of different ways of mixing up those words and then making sure that there were a couple of articles on my website written in plain English that would have those keywords in them. And if you just keep populating your website with stuff like this, after about, depending on the size of the marketplace you're in, it could be as little as 3 or as much as 12. You will watch your website crawl its way up from whatever page it was on where it wasn't found up to page one.
I think that's incredibly sound advice. And I talk about that all the time, both for Las OMS and for, you know, our customers that I'm fortunate enough to speak with. Content marketing or just, you know, having information that is valuable to patients and prospective patients is absolutely worth the time investing. And there are free tools out there to help fine-tune and figure out exactly, you know, what those keywords are and what the themes of the content should be. Google Trends is one of them. Google has their keyword tool is another one, and you can just search for them on Google and find the links. But it sort of helps you narrow down what that is. You know, I think I would counsel that write for your patients first and for Google second. So back in the day, it used to be you could just stuff as many keywords as you could into an article, and it would almost be nonsensical when you read through it, but it made sense to Google, and it was what Google was looking for. Those days are gone, thankfully.
Thankfully, yes, thankfully. Oh, man, I remember landing on pages like that.
Exactly. And so your patients and just even, you know, other practitioners, you know, everyone is looking for content that they can identify with and that can help them make decisions. And so, yeah, absolutely valuable. I do hear often, and I run into this myself, that there's almost a paralysis when you talk about content marketing because people just don't know. They get overwhelmed with what should I write about today? it's almost this self-defeating kind of notion where I panic about what I should write today and I can't figure it out, so I put it off tomorrow. And then I panic a little bit more because, oh, I didn't write yesterday. I have to write today, but I don't know what to write about. I always tell them, 50 words, a sentence, and then share an article, that you find interesting and why you find that article interesting. Use some of the other information that's out there as a crutch almost for yourself to kind of get in the habit of pushing that content out there, because it will help you on Google, and then it will help you broaden who you speak to digitally. The other statistic I'll throw out there is, and I'm still blown away that this, I can keep repeating this every year, but every year, 20% of all Google searches in that over the course of that year are new to Google. They've never seen them before. Which is just mind-numbing because you think about how many Google searches there are, and the fact that one out of five they've never seen before is unbelievable. So it just speaks to the fact that the more content you have, people are going to search in different ways, and it just gives you better chance of being visible.
Well, and it also says there's evolution, there's creativity. There's new things coming along all the time. You don't have to use 2020 hindsight and try to create what looked successful last week. You can create something
that's right.
New that hasn't been seen before.
Exactly. And it's almost freeing in a way where it always, for me, comes back to the sense of being overwhelmed in terms of how do I even go about starting to generate this content. And you don't necessarily have to be concerned about anything other than, if you were a patient, what would you want to see? It comes down to that.
I understand that you can sit down and face a blank piece of paper or a blank computer screen and realize that you need to go do the dishes or wax the floor or wash the dog or, whatever, because that blank piece of paper is terrifying. I get it. I've got a couple ideas. I want to run these by you, see what you think. Number one, I find it really helpful if I write out a calendar of when I'm sitting down to write, and then I sit down to write, I don't do anything else, and I write a list of what I'm going to write about on that day. I don't have to think up the content that day. I'm making a list of what I'm going to write and when I'm going to write it. And then what I do is I sit down and I just write, and I write without the expectation that I may use anything. I don't know what I'm going to write. I don't know how it's going to sound. I don't know if I'm going to like it or hate it, but I know this. If I sit down and I just flip and write when I say I'm going to write, you kind of exercise that muscle. Here's the other thing, especially about writing a lot of crap. You realize that you can write some really awful stuff and it didn't kill you, and you get it out of your system. And maybe the next time you sit down, you may get one sentence out of 20 minutes of word salad, but you get one sentence that is perfect, and you use that to start the next piece of writing.
I 100% agree with that. And I always counsel, as I'm talking to practitioners who have been doing just some one-on-one consulting with some of our customers on marketing, because they asked, and I'm more than happy to help. But I counsel that it is immensely important to budget time for your practice's health. Just as you budget time for each patient, treat your practice like a patient. And you budget time to do charting, you budget time, to see the patients, your budget time for, pre and post visits. But as I talk to practitioners and I ask them specifically, are you budgeting time to do marketing, to write, to, again, just for the health of your practice, 80 or 90% have said no. And I don't want people to feel like they're doing something wrong, but the time to start would be now. And just, even if it's an hour or two a week, just budget some time to write an email to your existing patients and just share anything. It could be new news. It could be an interesting article. It could be a special you have coming up for the holidays.
So you're saying keep an email list of your patients and communicate with them.
Absolutely.
How often is a good?
I would start with once a month.
Once a month.
If you ask someone what they feel about email, just an everyday person, they'll probably tell you that they get too many and it's overwhelming, but it is still the number one means of communication. Again, if you're sharing interesting information that your patients may have some sort of draw to or connection to, then they will open your email and they'll appreciate it.
You know, one of the ways that I've used that, because like I said, I really worked on the writing of content for my website. I don't write on it as much as I used to because it's got momentum. I don't need to write a new article twice a week to get my space on Google. I've already got it. So I just write enough to keep myself in that flow. But one of the things that I would do to try to engage people that was on my mailing list is I would take an article that I'd written that I thought was pretty good about something, you know, of interest because of the season, or something of interest because it, you know, it's a trending subject, or all of a sudden I got a bunch of patients with this issue. And so for whatever reason, that's what's going on. And in the email, I would, you know, have a number of little articles, mostly information, things to try to keep them out of the doctor's office, including mine. But instead of giving them everything in that email, I'd give them like a paragraph or a little teaser and say, click here to read the rest of the article. And what would that do? It sends them to my website, right? Sends them right to that article on my website. They can read the whole article on my website. And then, you know, there's a button that says schedule an appointment. Little call to action right there on every single page.
The key piece of that scenario you just laid out for us is that you're not creating new content. You might have a sentence or two that sets up the existing content, but you're not creating new content. And I stress that because at this point, when I'm having conversations with our customers, I get the sense that they're getting overwhelmed again. I always have to remind myself, and I hear this enough, that by and large, you know, the acupuncturist, they are not trained and they're not comfortable in marketing. You know, they're your medical professionals. And so it's not expected that you would have this understanding. Having said that, you are small business owners, many of you. It is, as I said, important to, you know, treat that practice, you know, like they were one of your patients.
I just want to take umbrage for a moment with, we're acupuncturists, we don't know anything about marketing. Anyone who's ever dated anyone, you've learned something about marketing. Anyone who's got children and you want them to do something, you bet your bottom dollar you've learned something about marketing.
It is true. I will tell you, I've probably spoken with thousands of our customers at this point, and the vast majority, I'm essentially parroting words that I hear from them and paraphrasing a little bit. But yeah, I was speaking with someone 2 days ago who is moving her practice from one state to another and is just terrified at starting over. I mean, you know, she has a website and she has what she has with social media, and she's just terrified because she had some help along the way to get to where she was from a marketing perspective. And now she knows that she has to tear that back down and build it up again. And I was able to kind of help her see a different perspective, that it's after what she thought about her brand, the visual, the name. And she shared that she didn't love them. And so, you know, I said, look, it's a great opportunity. You know, it's a fresh start. And here are some of the steps that you have to go through and things you need to think about immediately. And we just kind of put a little plan together. I could tell some of that kind of weight had been lifted.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to recreate yourself.
Absolutely. I think about marketing probably more than I should, more than my family would like me to. But if you start talking, you know, acupuncture treatment protocols to me, you know, I'm going to get overwhelmed because I wasn't professionally trained for that. I certainly enjoy acupuncture treatments, but if you start telling me, you know, exactly what you're doing, I'm going to have no idea what you're saying. So
don't bother me. I'm busy getting acupuncture.
Exactly. Exactly. I love the end result, but I trust that you do know what you're doing. And that's why I always preach, don't get overwhelmed. Here's the simple things you can do. And, you know, for Google AdWords, you really can get up and running in less than 15 minutes. You mentioned the webinar that that we had. I actually spoke with one of the attendees the week after who had launched Google AdWords over the weekend after that webinar and had a new patient. already.
Oh, man, that feels great, doesn't it?
Right.
Oh, I love that.
I mean, just to know that she was growing her practice. We were able to play a small role in that, but you can do that. You can sit down and write and just think about, you know, those touch points with your existing patients. And then, you know, what type of patient do you want to see come in the door? And,
you know, I think that piece is so important.
It is.
It's so important to know who you want to see, because I think we all have had this experience as practitioners. There's people that walk in our door, we're so happy to see them. We love working with them. Then there's the people, they're on our books, we look at their name, and we're kind of hoping they might cancel.
Right.
You know, the energy's just not there.
I hope I'm not one of them.
But, you know, in some context, we will be that person. And the reason for that is because not everybody connects with everybody for whatever reason, right? You can't be all things to all people. You know, one of the great things that I've found about doing marketing and putting out what I want to put out is it gives me a chance to attract the kind of people that I want to attract. And it gives the people that I don't really want to work with, you know, if I'm writing in my authentic voice in particular, they're going to read it and either go, yeah, I want to see this cat, or they're going to go, what the hell is that? Click, right? They're off somewhere else. I'm so happy that they never call me.
It's an important distinction. And
I think it's really important that
absolutely
to keep in mind, we do not want to attract everybody. We want to attract the kinds of people that we really want to work with. Now, if you're a new practitioner, I get it. You're thinking, I want to get anyone in the door. I can help anybody. I just got to build this thing. Those of you that have been in business a while know the deep, deep cost of treating people that are not the right fit for what you do.
Yes. Yes, and it's not, you know, worth your personal angst as well. That's one thing I love about digital marketing. I mean, you know, is that you can really target whether it's, you know, geographical location or the types of keywords someone's using to search or the types of content they're interacting with on social media. You can really target to that type of patient that you do want to get in the door. And then if you feel like, you know, your practice has room to grow, then you can expand that target and know that, you know, there's another, you know, segment of patients who you could most likely get into the door, and then you expand it from there. And these are the conversations that I love having, because I can tell that the practitioners that I've been speaking with, and you know, I do apologize if I'm painting a very kind of broad stroke. You know, there are some practitioners who have taught me things when it comes to marketing. And
well, I mean, you're a professional, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Professionals, you know, learn from everybody.
Absolutely. But the majority of practitioners that I've spoken with, you know, kind of are in this bucket where it is overwhelming. They haven't been trained for it and they don't really know where to start. And so, you know, I think that is sound advice. Just think about, you know, the type of patient you want to get in the door, whether that's a specific specialty. You know, there's some practitioners who specialize in women's health or in pain management or sports acupuncture. You know, think about that and start from there.
Yeah. I want to go back to something that we were talking about a few minutes ago in terms of content and repurposing it, because I think that is a brilliant thing. You know, you can write a blog post and then turn it into something that goes on Facebook or something that you put on Twitter or Instagram it with a picture or, I don't know, Snapchat. I don't even know what all the platforms are these days. I mean, repurposing content is pretty easy. It's basically cut and paste. I think we all know how to do that. But in terms of looking at what platform is going to give you more juice for the squeeze, so to speak, what are your thoughts on the main social media streams that acupuncture should be thinking about? Are there different crowds that inhabit different electronic ecosystems? How can we think about some of these different social media outlets? I mean, trying to hit all of them would be, I can't imagine trying to do that if you're running a practice. How do you pick out one or two or three that would give you a good return on your time?
There are differences, some subtle, some not, with the different media platforms. And again, and my mantra is, you know, don't get overwhelmed and start slow, and then you can build from there. Facebook still continues to be the dominant player, and part of the reason is that the registered members on Facebook tends to skew a little bit older now. It does skew, you know, there are some younger people as well, but it is skewing a little bit older now, and you've got all these different kind of walks of life represented there. They have incredibly robust advertising opportunities, and then it's just built for engagement. I would say Instagram would probably be the next one, although it tends to skew a little bit younger in terms of, you know, who is predominantly using Instagram. Mm-hmm.
So when you say younger, what does that mean? What age group is that? I don't even know what young means anymore.
Really starting at like age 13 up until mid-20s or so, maybe mid to late 20s. I mean, that's okay. The nice thing about Instagram is it is more of a visual communication platform than Facebook is. Pictures and videos just do really well with very, very limited commentary around that. Facebook doesn't have a lot more text versus video and pictures, but you have more opportunity to tell the story through text than through visual on Facebook than you do on Instagram. The other way to kind of think about this, and it's a little bit more bigger picture than your specific question, but this is not necessarily the case for every practitioner, but it could actually describe many. You essentially could build two different brands. Your one brand is the same, but how you portray that brand to the industry, and you know, there are practitioners who have built up an amazing resume of symposium talks and webinars and podcasts, and people who, you know, in the industry, you say, you know, I hear Matt Callison or I hear Wayfield Reese, and they are a brand in and of themselves within acupuncture practitioners. And then there's that brand that you're building up for your patients and prospective patients. And again, it's not necessarily different, but you're going to communicate differently. So it is an important distinction, because a lot of the content or more visual communication I see tend to be patients with acupuncture needles in them.
What is your thought about advertising yourself with an acupuncture needle sticking in someone?
I think it's absolutely the right thing to do if you're talking about a protocol within the industry. And I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. A prospective patient who maybe has not had acupuncture before actually might be a little bit more fearful if they're seeing the medical instruments as part of that visual communication. I've talked to some practitioners who say they will never show an acupuncture needle in a patient as, you know, to another patient. I was speaking with a customer last week who specializes in facial rejuvenation and cosmetic acupuncture. And some of her photos, while they were visually stunning, I could see might have a negative effect on prospective patients, because they're in some of those treatment protocols, you use a lot of needles and a lot of different types of needles. And I just know of my wife, who has had acupuncture a couple times, if she saw that, she might no longer be interested. And so these are things you just sort of have to think through in terms of, you know, who are you trying to speak to? And the reason I bring that up is because I've seen a lot of, you know, Instagram pages by practitioners that seems like they're speaking more to the industry as opposed to prospective patient. And that's okay if that is a goal. It might not be okay if your goal is to grow your practice and bring in new patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really agree with you on that one. I think as practitioners, we need to think that through very, very carefully. And I like the distinction that you make, that if we're communicating with our colleagues, sure, show some needles. Well, I think about dentists. They don't show the dentist with a drill going at somebody. Right. It's like, oh, yeah, right. You know, it's like they show somebody with smiling, happy teeth, or they, you know, they show the effects of their work. They don't show, you know, how they're doing it. Right. It's like nobody wants to know how the sausage is being made.
Exactly.
Right. You just want to enjoy the sausage.
Exactly. And this is kind of my own opinion, but it's just based on conversations I've had with my friends. And once they find out what I do for a living, the first question I always ask is, do those needles hurt? You know, so if you see a bunch of images with needles, it might bring up that fear that a needle hurts. And, you know, of course, my answer is, depending on the needle, it shouldn't hurt. But
I just ask when I get asked that question these days,
yes,
they say, does acupuncture hurt? I just say, would you like it to?
We can make that happen.
We can make
it. I like that. I might have to use that now.
Oh, go ahead and use it. Well, we charge extra for that.
I like
it's a,
that.
It's a special service. You know, I have another little bugaboo, which is use of the word qi. Probably 90% of acupuncturists, I'm getting on a soapbox here. Stand back, spittle might fly. Probably 90% of acupuncturists on their website, in the first paragraph, it's going to say, how does acupuncture work? It works by using qi, in parentheses, spelled, you know, pronounced C-H-E-E as in cheese, blah, 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 blah. My suspicion is most people don't care how it works. They just care that it works. You know, I live in the Midwest. On the West Coast, it might be different. But if I start using that energy language and start talking about invisible meridians and, you know, la-di-da-da-da, some people that will be attractive to. But that's a small part of the population here. They're not interested in hearing about this stuff that already sounds weird. They're interested in hearing about how will it help me. I'm going to go out on a limb here for just a moment, but I know that there's like the whole dry needling thing. And one of the things that the people that do that do, and they do very, very well, is they're languaging it within modern biomedicine. You know, again, I think it depends on the crowd that you want to treat. If you're going after the yoga crowd and a more alternative crowd, it might be fine to use that languaging. But if you're looking to work with mainstream America, I think it's helpful to use a language that connects with the people that are listening in whatever language it is that they use. And so I think that there's ways of talking about what we do, not that we dumb it down, but that we can talk about it in everyday plain English. I find there is a real power in connecting with people just where they are, not asking them to come too far over to our side, because they're already making a big leap thinking about going to acupuncture in the first place.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I like you said, I think it does have its place. I do even think it's okay to, you know, be true to yourself. So if that's something that you connect with, absolutely be true to yourself. But for me, I always bring it back to what problem are we trying to solve? And a prospective patient that is going to Google and searching for acupuncture for migraine relief, or, you know, acupuncture for pain relief, or opioid alternative, they're not going to connect with that type of language with qi, or any, you know, even something that pulls it more toward kind of the Eastern medicine. They have pain, they have, you know, a symptom, an ailment, they have something that they are searching for relief for. And if they see language that does not resonate with them, that is not part of their normal lexicon, then they will move on. Facebook calls it a 3-second audition. It's something that I bring up all the time, because, you know, as much as I love digital content and the platforms that have grown up over the past 20 years, it has actually created a very, very low attention span with people, because there's always an opportunity to move on to the next thing. And so that 3-second audition is, you know, if you can picture yourself looking at your own Facebook newsfeed, you know, you're using your thumb to scroll and you see something that is interesting, you'll stop and read it. If not, you know, you're moving on. You know, think about it in those terms. You know, what problem are you trying to solve, and how are your services positioned to help solve that? It may seem like you're dumbing it down a little bit too much, but that's how people are approaching it. You know, that's why they're out searching for acupuncture. That's why, you know, they're out searching for a solution to whatever it is that ails them. And, you know, I'll give you a good personal example. My daughter just had ACL repair surgery last week. She has heard the news about, you know, the dangers of opioids. She knew from people who've had ACL surgery that they were going to prescribe opioids, and she was freaking out. And so she was doing a lot of searching on how to get through this without having to take opioids. We've now got her into some acupuncture treatment, but, you know, the first couple of days she did take them just because it is a painful thing to go through. But that's a good example. I mean, she wouldn't connect with use of chi or some other language that might make sense to us, but, you know, it's not going to make sense to a 16-year-old girl who's facing a traumatic injury.
Right. I mean, people, like you say, they're looking to get their problem solved. They're probably already stretching themselves just to type the word acupuncture. But this brings up the other thing that you just said. I think this is brilliant because, like you, I think speaking in our authentic voice, and especially writing on our websites in our authentic voice, I think it's really important. We have to be true to ourselves. I think that's essential. And at the same time as that we're being true to ourselves, how can we make sure that we're connecting with someone else? This thing you say about the 3-second audition, I just listened to a podcast with a guy named Chris Voss. Have you ever heard of Chris Voss? You have. Yeah, the FBI negotiator. Yeah. He used to be a terrorist negotiator. He says you got 7 seconds to make a good first impression. You know, and as a hostage negotiator, oh man, you know, it's like, hi, I'm your hostage negotiator. I mean, how do you connect with somebody? He said this is brilliant, and I think all of us could use that. Whenever you meet someone and they're looking to you because they have hostages or because they got a bad knee, the question you have to answer in their mind is, do you see what they see? Can you connect with someone in such a way that you can let them know in a sentence or two that you see what they see, that you understand the problem they face?
That sums up right there. So again, I think you're right. It's good to be true to yourself. And if you connect with that language, that philosophy, let that side of, you know, your beliefs and your personality come out, but also think about it from a prospective patient's perspective. And I just have spent a lot of time over the past couple of weeks speaking one-on-one with some of our customers, and I've actually rewritten copy on their site, you know, or given them my suggestions anyway, you know, whether they choose to follow or not, you know, but I just wanted to give them sort of an alternative coming from, you know, just an everyday person's perspective. And, you know, a lot of what I see out there is kind of flowery language that doesn't get to the heart of someone's problem. Again, you're a medical professional and someone is seeking your services to help a problem they have. And I might be oversimplifying, but those are the terms they're using to search in Google. And that's if they're not finding information that kind of feeds back how they're looking for it, they will move on. And there's that, you know, 3-second audition.
Well, you know, we're talking about being on the first page of Google. You can buy your way to the top, but that is meaningless if you can't get them to stick on your website long enough to read what you have to offer.
Correct. And I will throw in a little wrinkle there. Google takes into account how engaging your search result is. So if you are at the top and people aren't clicking on it, you won't be at the top for very long.
Mm-hmm. Do they measure how much time people spend after they click as well?
They do, actually.
Uh-huh. So if you click and then gone, they're like, yeah, not so good. If you click and you're there for 3 minutes, that's a different story.
So, you know, specifically on Google, I always remind people that Google's product, other than data organization, really is the experience someone has searching for that information. And they protect that. That really is their secret sauce. And so if they can't protect that, then, you know, they are going to be weaker for it. So they do everything they do is geared toward, is someone going to find the information they're looking for, and was it the right information once they found it? That's where the, you know, write for your patient first and for Google second. You know, if you're just making sure that you're at the top of the search results and someone's clicking, but they're spending a couple seconds on your site and then they go back to Google, that's a signal to Google that it is not something they were looking for, and you could be adversely impacted.
Yeah. Anti-marketing.
Correct.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I can't believe an hour has gone by already. I could gab about this stuff forever, it seems.
As could I.
What about some resources? Let's close here with a few resources. Have you got any books or websites or TED Talks, anything that you might send our listeners here to for some stuff that you think is helpful when it comes to thinking about being better at dating? I mean, marketing.
which is almost synonymous. I mean, there's certainly some great TED Talks, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he has been in the advertising industry for a long time. He's actually British. He's remarkably funny, but also, you know, poignant in terms of the content he gets across. And so I always enjoy listening to TED Talks. I would spend time in... I mentioned tool Google Trends, and if you just Google Trends, it'll be the first link. When I first found this tool that they offered, it's a free tool. It's available to anyone. It was such a productivity killer for me that I had to kind of meter how often I went to it, because there is so much unbelievable information available. And in the webinar that I had a few weeks ago, I had a chart that showed the search trend for the key phrase acupuncture near me, which over the past year and a half has grown tremendously. So there are just naturally more people searching for acupuncturists in their specific area. But you can also put in any other types of terms. And so, I would spend time there. Google also has a content section called Think with Google. You can just Google that, and that'll be the first link you find. But they have tremendous white papers all around, and research and statistics all around digital marketing. Now, most of it comes back to, you know, if you spend more money on Google, you'll do better. So you take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, again, really, really good information there. Facebook also has a research arm. You can Google Facebook research. If you are interested in learning more about social media, I absolutely would do that. I would get more in tune with keywords. Keywords, not just from a Google perspective, and that's how a lot of people connect. You know, when they think of keywords, you think of search engines. As a marketer, when I talk to people, I just, you know, whether this is a flaw or, you know, something that's endearing to me, I listen in keywords. They could be hashtags, or it just, you know, I really want to hear how you talk about things. And so if you're just sort of naturally talking about things in a certain way, then I know that those keywords are important for me to use in marketing materials. And it kind of gets back to the, you know, the patient is, they have a problem they're trying to solve. And so they're talking about that problem in a specific way. And so if you listen to it, you can kind of pick out terms. I'm trying to kind of search for an example, but.
I just got an idea just from listening to you. So I'm thinking, where would I hear people talking about their problems in a way that it would help me understand the keywords for those problems? Every day in my clinic.
Right. Every day in your clinic. Yeah.
Every day in my clinic, I'm talking to people. They're telling me about their knee, their fertility, their headache, their digestion, whatever it is. Right. And it just occurred to me that I could actually do this as I'm charting my notes. See what the keywords are that are coming through. What are the themes I'm hearing again and again? And, go write me some blog posts and see what happens.
Right, exactly. I'll throw an example. It's a little bit of a different industry, but I worked for a digital advertising agency for a few years, and we had a client that was a pharmaceutical client, and they had a prescription drug and over counter, but really prescription drug for heartburn and COPD. Some of the keywords that sufferers of that condition use were quite colorful. And in fact, it was really powerful to show, you know, the CMO and the CEO of that company, how powerful it was and how much people really suffered. Every, you know, four letter, you know, curse word you could think of that you, you know, try to teach your kids not to use. These were real conversations people were having, you know, on social media about how painful this particular condition was. And so, not saying that we recommended using that in the copy of advertising and marketing materials, but it helped shape, you know, some of the language we used, because the emotion was just so raw and real that it opened some things up for us. And so I'd say listen to keywords, but then there's great keyword tools. So if you hear someone talking about migraines, for the longest time, I thought I had suffered from bad sinuses, and you went through a whole bunch of diagnostic tests, and finally, a doctor finally came to me and said, it's not sinuses, it's migraines you're suffering from. I could only talk about it from, you know, my limited understanding of what was going on. I could describe where the pain was and when it came, but, you know, I was using particular language to describe that. And then, you know, once we kind of broke through that, you know, it really turned out it was migraines. And so, okay, that completely changed things. So I call them digital clues, but they're, you know, you mentioned, listen to someone in your practice, you know, as you're talking to the patient, hear how they're describing things, because you can then kind of funnel that into the content you're writing and the keywords you're buying and the social media, you know, you're posting.
Yeah. And this is the way normal people talk about these kinds of problems. We have our ways of talking about them. And then Western medicine has its vocabulary and ways of talking about it. But what the most important thing is how our patients are talking about it to themselves and to the people around them. That's probably what they're typing into Google.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Carl, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a blast. I so appreciate you taking a little time to sit down with me. And I can't wait to get into clinic this afternoon. I'm going to put a little hashtag section on my
excellent
on my chart notes and just play around with this idea of listening to the keywords that people are saying and see if I can pull some patterns out of this and then go play with it on social media and such. Yeah.
Don't just let it sit in your charts. Then, you know, go see if other people are searching for that and write an article about it and, you know, buy keywords. So Michael, thank you for offering this platform for, you know, not just for me, but for, you know, everyone else who's come before me. You know, it's been a treat. So really appreciate it and look forward to the next time we can talk.
Sounds good. Talk to you then.